Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 17th. Happy St. Paddy's Day 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is 49 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Again, like I've been saying all week, it feels like spring. I think we're supposed to get cold and snowy this weekend, but hopefully it doesn't last too long. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Kurzweil, Nanobots, AI, and Posthuman. And that followed the last 2 days previous to that, talking about universal basic income and robots taking all the jobs. You know, this is something that the transhumanists have been talking about for quite a long time. And now the tech elite are proposing universal basic income as the solution for this new revolution that's happening very quietly, mind you. And a lot of people aren't paying attention. With robots and artificial intelligence, we looked a lot at AI and some of the stuff that's happening. AI teaching AI with a large knowledge vault repository where one robot can learn and all the others then can utilize that knowledge. It's a pretty scary thing. Yesterday, we continued on and listened to a clip from Kurzweil talking about whether or not artificial intelligence is ever going to demand rights and revolt against us, which you know that's going to happen at some point. And we dug into Kurzweil's vision of 2030 and how we're going to merge with the machine using nanotechnology. The scariest part about it is that Kurzweil is part of Google. Kurzweil, when he was hired as director of engineering for their artificial intelligence division, he was told that he was being given an unlimited budget. And, you know, especially considering all the connections that we've made between Google and DARPA, the Brain Project, the Precision Medicine, all these new ancillary companies that Alphabet, Google's parent company, have been spinning off. Remember, they even have the former head of the National Institute of Mental Health now working for Google Life Sciences, Verily, on mental health issues. You know, this isn't any joke. They definitely are going after our physical sovereignty as humans, as living beings, and they want to assimilate us into the machine. I found a story. This is the original one that I brought up many times when Kurzweil was hired. This is out of TechCrunch. Imagining the future, Ray Kurzweil has, quote, unlimited resources, unquote, for AI and language research at Google. Last month, and this was January 3rd, 2013, so it must have been December 2012. Oh, like I said, the unholy trinity, Kurzweil, DARPA, and Google. How fitting that he was hired in December of 2012. Yes, last month, famed inventor, entrepreneur, and futurist Ray Kurzweil announced that he was joining Google as director of engineering. In an email to TechCrunch, Kurzweil said at the time that he would be assuming a full-time position in Mountain View, focusing on, quote, new technology development as well as machine learning and language processing. Joining other giants of technology at Google like VP, chief internet evangelist, and father of the internet, Vint Cerf, the move was not necessarily an unexpected one, especially as Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin have long been fascinated by the singularity. Now, we heard an interview with Larry Page back a few days ago talking about how it's inevitable that we are going to be overtaken by artificial intelligence, and we are going to lose all of our jobs. And you know what? Don't worry about it, because we have this thing called universal basic income. We're just going to pay everyone to sit around and think about higher, more creative thoughts. I mean, that's what Kurzweil's been spinning as well. And guys, they are just trying to lull us into a false sense of security, making us believe that this utopia that is coming is in our best interest. And it's not. I mean, if you look at the way the bag has been closing, surveillance 24/7. We got, I don't even remember how many billion, trillion pixel satellites we have in the sky now surveilling 24/7. You know, this is just the next step to be able to surveil and control at a cellular level. Anyway, back to the story. Beyond being credited as the inventor of the flatbed scanner, the first print-to-speech reading machine, and other various speech recognition technologies, as well as text-to-speech synthesizers, Kurzweil is one of the better-known proponents of technological singularity, and he helped to popularize the concept. Well, yeah, I mean, he's the head of Singularity University. It's all they talk about is merging with the machine, how we're going to upload and download ourselves and have a live forever in our robotic body. And what's even more interesting is that we've had this push over the last few years of tech billionaires funding all of this longevity research that we see going on now in Silicon Valley. It's all kind of the start of precision medicine. Remember, DARPA has sprinkled funding a lot of these startup companies, the universities. We have DARPA also going to the universities and bringing them on contract for their best and their brightest to come work on a few-year project. And then they just spin them out to Google and say, hey, you know, let's come up with some great ideas that we can then monetize and commercialize. And if you remember back when we first looked at Obama announcing the Precision Medicine Initiative, that's exactly what he said. This is going to be as big for our economy as the Genome Project was. This brain project and precision medicine is not only going to make us healthier and happier, but it's going to be a cash cow for all of the big pharma and the tech companies out there. And it really is the full reason why, if you back up the truck and you look at from a 1,000-foot point of view down, you're going to realize that Obamacare, electronic medical health records, putting everyone into the database was a big part of all of this, as well as the endless hackings that we've seen everywhere that then made us be very afraid. Keith Alexander creating all the cyber patrols within the federal government at many different levels that now are embracing the tech community. The South by Southwest convention that's been going on down in Austin, Texas. Normally in the past, it's all been about music and happiness and, you know, new things that are cool and swanky. And this year, Obama showed up there and it's all the tech people that are there this year talking about their new fangled technologies that are coming, and they're going to make everybody just a really cool part of the machine because we're going to be able to improve humanity with it all. You know, and add to that, even COP21 was this year. We have to stay green. Let's cut everything out. Let's use technology to fix the environment. We have all this synthetic stuff going on, and we have all these capabilities of making these fuel cells out of biomatter. You know, as our synthetic biology program is being run out of the Department of Energy, we discovered there are a lot of interesting dots that connect, and none of it is good for us in the long run. Anyway, back to the story. Nonetheless, many have wondered what Kurzweil's new position would mean for Google. They're very secretive about it when he first started. And the billions of people that its global reach directly or indirectly touches, would they be uploading Kurzweil's brain into their data centers? Well, very interesting that they asked that question. And would it become the next Skynet? Well, because, yeah, I think that's kind of what they're working on. Fulfill technological prophecies, is that what's happening? Well, speaking at an event at the Singularity University today, XPRIZE chairman Peter Diamandis, and he's another rich billionaire that's shaping the future, as well as Kurzweil, shared in a dialogue that sheds a bit more light on just what Kurzweil and Google will mean. Thanks to a post by my friend at BetaBeat and Vivek Wallach's live tweets, we learn that the futurists will be, quote, working on advanced implementations of AI at Google, where he apparently will have, quote unquote, unlimited resources. And while it may seem odd that an independent thinker like Kurzweil, and yeah, I mean, what's really interesting about him going to work for a large corporation, albeit a swanky-ish corporation that back in the day of the dot-com, before the dot-com boom, Google was like one of the places you wanted to work. You could wear bare feet and shorts to work, not do your hair, sleep under your desk, have video games at breaks, you know, take a nap whenever you wanted. It was one of those places that encouraged you to be a nonconformist. Kurzweil has always been like the nutty inventor that people listened to, but they didn't really listen to. He had a small contingent that was all about merging with the machine, but Kurzweil was never really taken that seriously on the world stage. I mean, yes, he invented OCR scanning and he created a device that allowed blind people to read and the Kurzweil synthesizer. I mean, I'm not going to say that he's not a smart guy and that he didn't come up with some pretty earth-shattering inventions that kind of changed the way we did things at the time. But Kurzweil was always just kind of this bumbling, mumbling smart guy that was envisioning the day when he might be able to live forever because his dad died when he was young and he always wanted to get him back. And there's some real psychological issues behind all that. If you read into Kurzweil, I read a couple stories about him and there's some weird stuff in his background. But the fact that something, an organization as huge, as global as Google would bring Kurzweil into the fold and put him into a position of power, and especially into a position where they're going to let him make all of his wildest lunatic dreams come true with an unlimited budget, has got to give you cause for concern. Anyway, let's read a little bit more. While it might seem odd that an independent thinker like Kurzweil would join a large corporation, that's what I was saying, given Google's reach, enormous computing resources and talent pool, along with the presumed freedom to investigate whether or not androids do dream of electric sheep, there is plenty of incentive to take this kind of work to Mountain View. Participating directly in innovation, arguably at one of the forefronts, likely has a bit more appeal to Kurzweil than writing books and speaking at events. And after all, who needs to know how to read when robots can do that for us, right, and feed us grapes? It's likely the same impetus that drew Sebastian Thrun or Peter Novig to Google, for example. In a conversation with Demandez, Kurzweil said that he envisions his role at Google to be one which helps to create the technology that truly understands human language and its real meaning. At this point, Siri loudly gets up and leaves the room. Ha ha ha, yeah. Now, Siri, interesting that they mentioned Siri, another language processing program that can take meaning out of human words as well as decode some slang. It can learn how you speak and what you mean. We found out from an interview with the head of DARPA, and I don't remember her name, she's an Indian woman, that Suri originally was a DARPA project as well. So here it is sitting on the Apple phone, and we have the FBI saying that they don't know how to crack an Apple phone. I don't know. I kind of call BS on all of this. I mean, we have a DARPA application running in the core of the Apple iPhone, yet none of our intelligence agencies can access anything inside the phone. Doesn't make sense to me. There's got to be a back door somewhere. Anyway, thanks to its many far-reaching tentacles, Google is already has an enormous amount of information about human speech, thought, and beyond. Knows where we are, what we're interested in, who our friends are, and what we say in our emails. What if Google were actually able to understand us, the user, to paraphrase a question by Kurzweil? And you know, we talked about this the other day. I mean, when Google first started back in the 90s, everything was free. We had free search, and then we had free email, and then we had all this other free stuff. Now they even have Google, like a Google Dropbox and Google Docs and all this other crap, Google Voice, you know, and everybody kept buying into it. I know I did. Yo, look at how cool it is. It's free, free, free. But the whole time they have been collecting that data and saving it because there is no free lunch. Remember, there's one thing you remember from me. There is no free lunch. Mr. Feinauer back in the 80s made sure we understood that, and he's been right all this time. There is no free lunch, and if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Anyway, so yeah, Google now has this whole entire data store. Not only that, but everywhere you've gone using your Chrome browser, you know, one of these days they're going to need something against you. And look, hey, look, she has a file. Let's start doing a search and see what kind of dirt we can find on her. You know, very convenient that all of that is stored somewhere in a large data center just waiting for the day when they need to blackmail you for something or get you to talk or get you to make a false confession, whatever. In part, anyway. But all this data, that is a frightening concept, and not really even in part. It's easy for companies to become wrapped up in defending their marketing positions, increasing their stock price, which often seems to work against them, or at least their presumed better innovation-centric selves. So while Kurzweil's mission may be an appealing one for us armchair thinkers, the question is whether Google will be able to maintain its don't be evil mantra in the face of innovation, exponential technological growth, and knowing anything that happens anywhere in minutes, as well as the singularity. There was a lot in that sentence, but it's everything echoed that we have been saying here for years on end. You know, Google's don't be evil is kind of like the rudest joke ever, because that was their tagline to begin with. And Google has turned out to be probably one of the potentially most evil organizations on planet Earth of all time, as far as all their tentacles and who they're touching and what they know and what they can do. And we're going to continue looking at that today. While it may be just food for science fiction fans, Kurzweil said that tech is not moving in a linear manner, but toward the exponential. We talked about this yesterday. The law of exponential returns. If you look that up, you will see a graph that starts small and then makes a straight up curve, because that's what happens when technology creates the next technology. We're at a point now where we are no longer lacking in computer CPU resources. Memory is no longer $1,000 a meg like it used to be back in the early days. Everything's dirt cheap, and we can cluster things together and make large cloud computers that can, on demand, give you CPU power to process or crunch any type of data that you need. You could buy supercomputer time. You can make your own. I mean, it's not rocket science anymore. And so we will have the law of exponential returns happening faster and faster as the days go on. Anyway, he seems to think it's going to create abundance, at which point demand has chimed in to say that, in fact, the world's biggest problems are its biggest marketing opportunities. Evil laughter, because he continues, our biggest market opportunities are energy, food, and water, or scarcity thereof. And we knew it's called the economics of scarcity. Supply and demand, people. When there's not enough food, when there's not enough electricity, and when there's not enough water to drink, you better believe that the ones that are going to get it are the ones that can pay for it. And they think that we're going to be able to either control or fix all these things, wishful thinking or not. We need more that believe in this. What? We need more that believe in the world's biggest problem or its biggest market opportunities? I don't know. This is using technology to fix all of our perceived problems, apparently. I don't think we would have energy, food, and water problems if it weren't for all the big corporations polluting everything and making them scarce. Anyway, we can use technology for creativity or destruction. It's up to us, says Kurzweil. And while it may be hard for people to understand the multivariate implications of technology's exponential growth curve, things are indeed changing quickly. Asking questions of our phones and getting answers seemed crazy just a few years ago, he said. And today we complain that it isn't perfect, and therein lies the other rub. We expect a lot, and technology has taught us to do so, yet we often give very little ourselves. Moore's Law will run out of steam this century, and that's reaching the physical limit of electronic circuits being made smaller and smaller to the point where they can't fit any more circuits onto a circuit board. Moore's Law will run out of steam this century and will be replaced by new paradigms, Kurzweil told the crowd. As exponential technologies grow at the speed of light in fields like AI, nanotech, robotics, and computational neuroscience, we also have quantum computing that's coming. That's why I thought they said the speed of light, but they didn't even mention that. Quantum computing, if they can get that all cracked, and they actually have, for the very first time, shown quantum entanglement visibly so we could observe it using light. So it's pretty interesting. That will change everything. And they've been able to now use light and photonics and all kinds of different flashing technologies to be able to do interesting things with the brain, like insert and remove memories. I just saw there was a brand new story that came out yesterday about that and about curing Alzheimer's with flashes of light. How interesting is that? Soon we will see high school kids contributing to innovation in a meaningful way, he said. While it is an exciting, if not terrifying, notion, soon may be a relative term considering that computer science classes are currently absent in about 95% of high schools in the U.S., though that is starting to change too, he says, albeit slowly. The most salient point, at least from my perspective, is that we can all benefit from remembering to think big rather than the alternative. Minutia be damned. To Google's credit, and this is not me, this is TechCrunch, it has the reputation of supporting and fostering this kind of thinking, and it is exciting to think about the possibilities that Kurzweil will have with access to the levers of Google's resources. And yes, it is also somewhat terrifying. I would say more terrifying than exciting. And as are some of the implications of the speculations from a singularity believer. And there's a little tweet below. Ray Kurzweil thinks that intelligent robots are the ones that are going to colonize space, not humans, but they will be an extension of us. Do, do, do. So I don't know. Chew on that one. So Google gave Kurzweil the reins to their artificial intelligence division. He is also the one that's been talking about nanobots in our brains connecting us to the internet and making us part of the machine in the future. We want to look at a couple different bits and pieces of this. Let's take a look at some of the AI at Google. By the way, the Go champion in China lost in the end. He won one game out of five against Google's AI machine playing Go, which is a game that is way more complicated than chess. It's a 2,500-year-old game out of China, maybe South Korea. Maybe it was South Korea. I don't know. It's an Asian game, very complex and very old. And I read a story yesterday that talked about South Korea. You know, this was a big deal for humanity on one end, that the global champion, very intelligent young man, only won one out of five games against Google's AI in this game Go. But what was even more interesting is that in South Korea, they were kind of freaking out about this because, number one, they actually understand how difficult this game is. Many of us in this country don't even know how to play it. And number two, this is something that is a part of their history. And it was required as a, not required, but I guess looked at as kind of a mark of intelligence. If you were a champion in this very complicated game, it was something that made you a very smart human. And the fact that he was beaten four out of five games, and not just in a tit for tat motion, they said that the machine showed very creative ways of winning the game where it didn't make moves automatically. It actually showed sophistication and beauty in the way it was deciding how it was going to make the moves. And everybody in South Korea went out and drank heavily after the AI won the match. So, you know, you didn't see that in a lot of stories here. But anyway, a few interesting things that have happened at Google over the last few months now. And we mentioned this at the time. The head of Google Search Engine, which was their very first toe in the water of the internet, Amit Singhal, announced his retirement. He is stepping down and leaving the company to, of course, be with his friends and family in retirement. And who is stepping up to take the search engine division but John Giandrana? We talked about him at the time as well, who was the head of the AI division. We're going to look at this again. AI is transforming Google search, and the rest of the web is next. And the reason why this is a big deal is because when this first started to happen, when they started tinkering with allowing the AI now to run the Google search engine, this was back a few months ago. I had seen a story out of one of the technical publications that they were doing a beta test, and there were only select users that were being put onto the artificial intelligence search engine, and that you wouldn't notice any difference. And right at that time is when I started noticing freaky things happening in Chrome browser. So I am assuming that I may have been one of the beta testers, because what started happening is when I would put something into the Chrome URL field to search, it would pop me back instead of what I typed in about blank. And I remember thinking I had an about blank virus at the time. Did a few searches to see if that was going around again. Like, how could I possibly have gotten infected? And I didn't see anything out there. I ran a couple virus scans. I didn't have anything on my machine. But it kept happening for a while. And it wasn't just on one machine. It was on multiple machines. And you'd have to hit enter maybe 10 times. You'd have to copy paste twice to get your URL to stay in there. And it would think and think and think. And then if it brought you back a result, you know, you got your result, but that wasn't all the time, because a lot of times you get this DNS probe, internet not found. DNS probe, internet not found. Just out of the blue, though, everything else worked fine in the internet. And I thought to myself, huh, really curious if this has something to do with that beta test at Google. Well, then this story comes out that the head of Google search is stepping down. The head of Google AI is moving in to take over the search engine, and they're rolling it out to the web. And you know what? It is way more common than not now that I get my Chrome browser just not able to find anything. And we're not even talking about searches anymore. We're talking about just plugging in, gmail.com. It doesn't even want to go there. And when we look at some of the other things that happen in tandem, like Bill Clinton calling for the internet truth police. Back when Fukushima happened, we looked at that story about a month or so ago again. And him calling on something outside of a government entity, some sort of public institution, they would be in charge of making sure that we had truth on the internet, that fact-checked everything. And then we find out that right at the same time that the head of Google search was stepping down and the head of AI was taking over and they were running these beta tests, that they launched a new algorithm. And when Google algorithms come out, it always screws up web searches, because they always include new ways that make your traffic rank at the top of the search. Well, there was lots of speculation this time that they were using this repository of knowledge. And we've talked about now these repositories of knowledge for teaching AI, right? This, some of the stuff that we read was some of the research that they were doing at MIT. But Google's been doing the same thing. And they created this robot Wikipedia of facts. And as part of their truth ranking algorithm, part of their new search engine, and part of how you're going to rank in the internet, what they're supposedly doing is they're taking facts on the websites that you're searching content from, and they compare them to their quote unquote truth database. And if your information on your website does not appear in their version of the truth, your website will not be ranked with a high ranking in the search engine. So there you go. Good way to censor without censoring. Good way to get around the First Amendment and free speech and being able to say what you want to say and having people see it. Anyway, so back to this. This is from February 4th, 2016. AI is transforming Google search. The rest of the web is next. Yesterday, this was back in February, the 46-year-old Google veteran who oversees the company's search engine, Amit Singhal, announced his retirement. And in short order, Google revealed that Singhal's rather enormous shoes would be filled by a man named John Giandrea. On one level, these two guys are just doing something new with their lives, but you can also view the pair as an ideal metaphor for a momentous shift in the way things will work inside of Google and across the tech world as a whole. I mean, guys, people don't think that this stuff is important, but technology and Google in particular affects every single realm of our lives in some six ways to Kevin Bacon way. Okay. It touches us in many different private places that we maybe don't want to give it access to, but it's there anyway because of what they've done in the past. They have been collecting information and your habits and your behaviors and your contacts and your conversations and your search history for many, many, many years. Giandrea, you see, oversees Google's work in artificial intelligence, and this includes their deep neural networks, networks of hardware and software that approximate the web of neurons in the human brain. And by analyzing vast amounts of digital data, these neural nets can learn all sorts of useful tasks like identifying photos, recognizing commands spoken into a smartphone, and as it turns out, responding to internet search queries. In some cases, they can learn a task so well that they outperform humans. And they forgot to mention beating chess champions. They can do it better, they can do it faster, and they could do it at a much larger scale. This approach called deep learning is rapidly reinventing so many of the internet's most popular services, from Facebook to Twitter to Skype. And over the past year, it has also reinvented Google Search, where the company generates most of its revenue. In early 2015, a Bloomberg publication recently reported Google began rolling out a deep learning system called RankBrain that helps generate responses to search queries. And as of October, RankBrain played a role in a very large fraction of the millions of queries that go through the search engine with each passing second. And as Bloomberg says, it was Singhal who approved the rollout of RankBrain. And before that, he and his team may have explored other simpler forms of machine learning. But for a time, some say he represented a steadfast resistance to the use of machine learning inside of Google search. In the past, so the guy that's stepping down was resisting for a very long time, and he finally said, fuck it, and retired and gave it all up. This is kind of scary, you know. He might have known things that we don't. This is Skynet that is now being let loose on the internet, is what they've done. RankBrain, or whatever they want to call it, was enclosed in a box for testing. And then they let it do a beta test over partial searches that were happening on a daily basis, and now they're letting it free. That should scare all of us. The concern, as described by some former Google employees, was that it was more difficult to understand why neural nets behaved the way it did and more difficult to tweak their behavior. So, yeah, let's hope it doesn't go evil where we can't control it and it starts shutting shit off. I don't know, man. This isn't a good thing. Starts firing off missiles. I mean, anyone who's ever been a fan of dystopic science fiction can see where this potentially could lead. These concerns still hover over the world of machine learning, and the truth is that even the experts don't completely understand how neural nets work. So let's add that to the long list of technologies, mad science gone mad, that we've been releasing into the wild that we don't quite understand how they work. But I guess we're going to figure it out, aren't we? It's called lighting a fire and then being under the gun to figure out what went wrong. But hey, we're the guinea pigs, so you know what? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. But they do work. And if you feed enough photos of a platypus into a neural net, it can learn to identify a platypus. If you show enough computer malware code, it can learn to recognize a virus. And if you show it enough raw language, words, or phrases that people might type into a search engine, it can learn to understand search queries and help to respond to them. In some cases, it can handle queries better than an algorithmic rule hand-coded by human engineers. And artificial intelligence is the future of Google search. And if it's the future of Google search, then it is the future of so much more. This past fall, the author of this article sat down with a former Googler who asked that I withhold his name because he wasn't authorized to talk about the company's inner workings. And we discussed the role of neural networks inside the company's search engine. At one point, he said the Google Ads team had adapted neural nets to help target ads. But the organic search team was reluctant to use this technology. And indeed, over the years, discussion of this dynamic had popped up every now and again on Quora, which is the popular question and answer site. Edmund Lau, who worked on Google's search team and is the author of the book, The Effective Engineer, wrote in a Quora post that Singhal carried a philosophical bias against machine learning. And this is the head of search that just stepped down. And with machine learning, he wrote, the trouble was that it is, quote, hard to explain and ascertain why a particular search result ranks more highly than another for a given query. And he added, it is difficult to directly tweak a machine learning-based system to boost the importance of certain signals over others. Ex-Googlers agreed with this characterization. And yes, Google's search engine was always driven by algorithms that automatically generate responses to each query, but these algorithms amounted to a set of definite rules. Google engineers could readily change and refine these rules, and unlike neural nets, these algorithms didn't learn on their own. As Lau put it, rule-based scoring metrics, while still complex, provided a greater opportunity for engineers to directly tweak weights in a specific situation. But now, Google has incorporated deep learning into its search engine, and with its head of AI taking over search, the company believes that this is the way forward. And look, if you understand what we've been talking about with this hive mind learning, where they put facts in a large repository that then the artificial intelligence can access, you can see very easily how the truth algorithm, the AI truth algorithm, could have been added to this new way of Google search working. So now they're checking and whether or not you have an approved content on your website to be able to be dished out and displayed for the end user searcher. The next section is titled Losing Control. Not what you want to see in an AI article about Google. It is true that with neural nets, you do lose some control. But good thing you don't lose all of it, says Chris Nicholson, the founder of the deep learning startup called SkyMind. Neural networks are really just math. Linear algebra and the engineers can certainly trace how the numbers behave inside of these multi-layered creations. The trouble is that it is hard to understand what a neural net classifies a photo or a spoken word or a snippet of language in a certain way. People understand the linear algebra behind deep learning, but the models it produces are less human readable. They are machine readable, says Nicholson, and they retrieve very accurate results, but can't always explain on an individual basis what led them to those accurate results. What this means is that in order to tweak the behavior of these neural nets, you must adjust the math through intuition, trial and error, and then you must retrain them on the new data with still more trial and error. It's doable, but it's complicated. Like, guys, what? So we can't really control them directly, I believe is what he's saying. We have to kind of guess, use our intuition, and then see what happens, and it still might kill people, but don't worry about it because we'll just tweak it some more because we think maybe then if it wasn't here, it might be way over there. We'll tweak it again and see what happens. Nope, kill more people. Like, how crazy is this? I mean, obviously, the Google search engine isn't killing anybody right now, but what happens when this turns into the big super brain that runs everything? Because you know that's going to happen. There's a direct connect to DARPA. We have Regina Duggan and DARPA Dan over there working on all these smart technologies as well. They're not in the same division as Kurzweil or whatever the other dude's name is. I always forget. I can't say his name. Hold on. Scroll, scroll, scroll. I shouldn't have done that because I can't find my space again. Giandria. But don't think that they don't have dotted lines. They're not talking. There isn't plans because there are. All right. Back to this losing control. So, yeah, we really don't know, like, how to change it. And when we do change it, well, it might still not work. And then we'll have to guess some more. But hey, it's doable, but it's complicated. And as Google moves search to the AI model, it's unclear how the move will affect its ability to defend its search results against claims of unfairness or change the results in the face of complaints. And these concerns aren't trivial. Today, Google is facing a European antitrust investigation as to whether it unfairly demoted the pages of certain competitors. And what happens when it's really the machines making these decisions and their rationale is indecipherable? Well, who knows? And even scarier than this is the Google self-driving car. We got self-driving cars and now they're petitioning Congress to get this passed and get all the laws unified between all the states so they can make this happen like ASAP. Yet, there's lots of concern by scientists out there that the Google self-driving cars just aren't ready for prime time. And they even say in the mainstream clip that people could die. And this is just beyond insanity. And we are pushing AI for AI's sake because we think that this should be the technological revolution without thinking of the future consequences. Remember, Giandria said it's all about, maybe it was Demandes. That's who it was all about. Taking our problems and making money out of them. Disaster capital. Anyway, humans will still guide these machines, but not in the same way that they were guided in the past. In any event, deep learning has arrived on Google search, and the company may have used other forms of machine learning in recent years as well. Though these technologies sacrifice some control, Google believes the benefits outweigh the sacrifices. Yeah. The learning outweighs the dangers. To talk about deep learning, to be sure, deep learning is still just a part of how Google search works. According to Bloomberg, Rank Brain helps Google deal with about 15% of its daily queries and the queries the system hasn't seen in the past. Basically, this machine learning engine is adept at analyzing words and phrases that make up a search query and deciding what other words and phrases carry just as much meaning. And as a result, it is better than the old rules-based system when handling new queries, queries Google search has never seen before. But over time, systems like this will play an even greater role inside internet services like Google Search. And at one point, Google ran a test that pitted its search engineers against Rank Brain. Both were asked to look at various web pages and predict which would rank highest on a Google search result page. And Rank Brain was right 80% of the time. The engineers were only right 70% of the time. This does not detract from Singhal's work, however. He joined Google in 2000 and a year later was named Google Fellow, the highest honor Google bestows on its engineers. For most of Google's history, he has ruled the company's search engine, and that search engine has pretty much ruled the internet. But machine learning is rapidly changing that landscape, and by building learning systems, we don't have to write these rules anymore, says John Giandria to a room of reporters inside Google's headquarters. He says, increasingly, we are discovering if we can learn things rather than writing code, we can scale these things much better. So, guys, Skynet has been turned loose on the internet. There's another story. Google is turning its lucrative web search over to AI machines. Rank Brain uses artificial intelligence to filter results. When Google patent Alphabet Inc., oh, Google parent Alphabet Inc., reported eye-popping earnings last week, and this was from October 26, 2015, its executives could not stop talking up the company's investments in machine learning and artificial intelligence. For any other company, that would be a wonky distraction from its core business, but at Google, the two are intertwined. Artificial intelligence sits at the extreme end of machine learning, which sees people create software that can learn about the world. And Google has been one of the biggest corporate sponsors of AI and has invested heavily into it for video, speech, translation, and recently search. And for the past few months, a very large fraction of the millions of queries a second that people type into the company's search engine have been interpreted by an artificial intelligence system named RankBrain. RankBrain uses artificial intelligence to embed vast amounts of written language into mathematical entities called vectors that the computer can understand. And if RankBrain sees a word or phrase that it isn't familiar with, the machine can make a guess as to what word or phrases may have a similar meaning and filter the results accordingly, making it more effective at handling never-before-seen search queries. Now, stop. Because when we talked way back when Kurzweil first went over to Google, I had discussed what Kurzweil's new mission was supposed to be, and that was to collect unformatted text from the internet, not databased, not tagged, not indexed, text in searches, in online chat forums, in emails, scrape that information and try to determine the meaning of words from the context of what was being said. Trying to learn slang from the context of what was being said. So, even if you didn't have a definition for a word, you could infer what a word meant just by the context of the words around it, and how important that would be to the future of surveillance technology as well. Here comes RankBrain, and describing how RankBrain works, that's exactly the type of thinking that the AI is now doing. Never before seen search queries, but finding similar meanings and then filtering results accordingly. All right, we're going to hop over to another story now that's going to look at what exactly is RankBrain and why does it matter. This is out of Forbes. What is Google RankBrain and why does it matter? Recently, Google made another one of its fascinatingly yet painfully ambiguous announcements. The company is now relying on the power of artificial intelligence known as RankBrain to monitor its search results, make progress where necessary, and ultimately guide the development of their core search algorithm. In fact, over the past several months, a substantial percentage of all Google queries were handled by RankBrain itself. The average user, people like you and me, haven't noticed anything especially different except for me. But according to the Google's plan and their current available data, this move to RankBrain will make the web an easier, better place to search. That being said, if we haven't noticed much of a difference, why is RankBrain such a big deal? What is it actually doing? And what is that? Why is that relevant to the average user? Well, RankBrain is an artificial intelligence system that is being applied to and used with Google's current search engine algorithms to provide better results to user queries. And I mean, do you guys understand that every time we use Google search now, we are teaching their artificial intelligence something new? And every single one of us distributed around the globe that is Google said is our homepage, that we go in and type things bleep, we are training their machine to learn. You know, IBM's doing that same thing. They have a text to speech. No, they have a speech to text algorithm within Watson, their AI. It's out on their website. You can upload audio and Watson will turn it into text, but you have to agree before you use it to allow Watson to use your audio as part of its machine learning. And it's kind of scary that they're doing that. It's just like 23andMe when you give them your DNA to find out whether or not you're related to some distant relative. You also can check a box to say that they can use your DNA for any type of new pharmaceutical development, any type of National Institute of Mental Health or National Institute of Health program where they're giving up DNA to try to find cures to things. We all become the guinea pigs, guys, and we're all teaching these machines by using ourselves as input. Rooted in machine learning, Rank Brain will use mathematical processes and advanced understanding of language semantics. And that is Kurzweil. To gradually learn more about how people and why people search and apply those conclusions to future search results. And rather than being pre-programmed to respond to certain situations in specific predetermined ways, it can update itself over time. Think of it as a robot that can constantly score for better parts to upgrade itself with, rather than relying on outside humans for occasional maintenance. What Rank Brain isn't. Google is a complicated company with thousands of different products moving in 1,000 different directions. To better clarify exactly what Rank Brain is, it is helpful to spell out what it is not. It is not a new knowledge graph. Knowledge graph is an artificial intelligence program too, but this isn't a new version of Knowledge Graph, nor is it directly affiliated with this feature. And I thought Knowledge Graph was the truth algorithm, the repository for information. It's a proprietary system that attempts to understand information on the web in order to identify and connect facts. Yes, Knowledge Graph is the data repository. So, no, it isn't the data repository. And it says it's not directly affiliated with this feature. They don't say, though, whether or not it's utilizing that feature as part of its search engine optimization. What else Rank Brain isn't? It isn't an algorithm update. No, no, no. Don't think of Rank Brain as the way you would think of panda or penguin or hummingbird. This isn't a new algorithm, nor is it any kind of standalone update to assist that algorithm. Instead, it is a new modification that is working in conjunction with Hummingbird, the new algorithm, to produce more meaningful results. What do we know about Hummingbird? What is the name of Google's new search algorithm? Well, it's Hummingbird. So Rank Brain, nope, that's our understanding. Hummingbird is an overall search algorithm, just like the car has an overall engine in it. The engine may be made up of various parts. Hummingbird contains other parts with familiar names in the search engine space, such as Penguin, Panda, Payday to fight spam, Pigeon designed to improve local results, Top Heavy designed to demote ad-heavy pages, Mobile Friendly to design to reward mobile friendly pages, and Pirate designed to block pages that have copyright infringement. So how nice is that? But they don't really tell you what Hummingbird does. And that's where there's lots of speculation that part of this this knowledge base is part of this new algorithm that is being utilized with Rank Brain, their new artificially intelligent system. Oh, the tangled web Google weaves. As mentioned in the original Bloomberg article, Rank Brain can actually be considered a new ranking signal. But as far as ranking signals go, this is just one third of the most important determining what gives page an eventual rank. Because Google is very secretive, oh, really, about the precise mechanics of its ranking algorithm, we have no idea what the top two ranking signals are or what most of the other important ranking signals are. But we do have an idea of the ranking signals that exist today, many of which have been put into an infographic. And we're not going to look into that infographic today. So where do we leave this? Well, knowing our connections between Kurzweil, DARPA, and Google, we're going to end this with a story that we did back in 2014, DARPA's new biotech division wants to create a transhumanist future. And if you remember, they created a brand new division for synthetic biology. The Pentagon's Advanced Research Wing has announced its latest budget, and whoa, does DARPA ever have some ambitious plans for the future? Their new biotech unit will be harnessing biology for national security and dealing with everything from stopping plagues to building synthetic soldiers. DARPA's commitment to cutting-edge innovation is unquestioned, and the very essence of the defense agency is to make sure that the U.S. military technology is more sophisticated than that of the nation's rivals. And among its many current initiatives, DARPA is working on advanced robotics, an artificial human brain, next-gen robotic aircraft, advanced prosthetics, and self-teaching computers. If anyone's going to build a recursively improving AI, it's going to be DARPA or Google. And of course, the Pentagon wants a computer that can teach itself. And last but not least, in regards to something that we talked about yesterday, which was, if I can get there, which was Kurzweil talking about nanobots in our blood. It's Google X, which that's what they were calling it before. It's now their life sciences division. And verily, Google X wants to track cancer with nanoparticles as well as wearable technologies. Yes, they do. They are in development. Google X, the company's secretive arm tasked with dreaming up the future, is, as you would imagine, pretty ambitious. But in the area of medicine, their plans seem ripped from the pages of science fiction. Today at a conference, and this was October 14, 2014, right around when DARPA announced their their bio, whatever it was, program, their transhumanist program, Google X announced a project that it wants to track cancer in your blood with the help of nanoparticles in wearables. So says Andrew Conrad of the Life Sciences Chief with Google X Lab, who detailed that the project and discussed some of its forward-thinking aspects. Patients would swallow a pill, just like Regina Duggan said, give you magic powers, filled with magnetic nanoparticles that would then attach to your body's cells and proteins. All right, guys, if you can even believe it, we have reached the end of the show. It is Thursday. Make sure you stick around. Kevin Blanche is live up next. Then we have the Ocelli Effect.